Harih Om. Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare
Krishna Krishna
Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay. So last time we got through the primary. We did anything on the secondary?
No.
Okay. So you've all been reading through this, kind of getting a little familiar with it, or not so much? Huh? Oh, Sudarshan is not here. He's sick. Yeah. So. Okay. Now secondary creation. Then that's where you're actually dealing with the material world. That's where things are actually functioning. So this is where then you have to make the connection. Means the origin is always on the other side of the Viraja River, but the connection is always on this side. Does that make sense? For philosophy, then it goes all straight through. It doesn't have to deal if you can connect it at any point. But when you're connecting the material subject matters, which means anything other than philosophy, any other branch of Vedic knowledge other than philosophy is considered material, arts or sciences. So then, those all connect on this side, though they originate on that side, right? But they manifest to us on this side. But what's manifest on this side is a reflection of an original on that side. Does that make some sense? It means all these shastras that we're dealing with, in the spiritual realm, they talk about them, they refer to them, they quote from them. They're just part of the culture that Krishna has created. Does that make some sense? Yeah. It means that Krishna has created this culture to enjoy rasa. And so then he has brought those different aspects that are there, everything that he considers as valuable for rasa, has then been created in the spiritual realm, because the spiritual realm is purnam, it's complete. Right? So, like a hi. Om purnamida. Purnamidam, purnat purnam, udachyate, purnasya, purnam adaya, purnameva shishyate. So this idam means, I know it means this. Right? And then purnam is that. There's some other technical points we can find out from that. But the Vedas, the Upanishads are always referring to this and that. This meaning the material world, that meaning the spiritual world. Right? So, this aspect of comparing it to the spiritual world, that's actually what we want. Right? We want to be able to see a subject's origin in the spiritual world. Okay, is the screen closed? That one? Yeah? Okay. No, as long as the screen, because I saw some mosquitoes.
I'll latch it.
Or just close the doors. So if you want to. So that principle is what we're trying to get to. We're trying to see that. Then it makes operating this so much easier. There's always going to be a difference, because there it's based on the pure love of the devotees. Well, here it's not. Here it's based basically on piety, why it goes on. But the devotees use it because it's the same basic medium that the devotees in the spiritual world use for rasa. Does that make sense? Like that. Like Mother Jashoda's duties as a mother, they happen spontaneously. And that is her medium for expressing her love for Krishna. Those become reflected into the material world, that for a trained mother, then these become exactly the same things that Mother Jashoda does for her child. The mothers of this world will do for their children. But the difference is in the spiritual world, Mother Jashoda is doing it to please Krishna, not for her own purpose, and Krishna is God. But in the material world, the mother thinks she's God and the child thinks they're God. And so then each one is trying to enjoy that relationship rather than serve through it. So it appears as service. That's why it's called pious. Piety means you're actually in a mood of service. Certain, you know, whatever are the moods of the spiritual world. No attachment, you know, mundane attachment. Always in a mood of service, never trying to control, never trying to enjoy. All those different moods that are there, when they're manifest here, that is called piety. Right? But the problem is people here will use that piety for their own purpose. Their own purpose is to control and enjoy the material energy and those living entities that fall into their, you know, purview of existence that they can deal with. Does that make sense? So now what the devotee is doing is he's not approaching all this Vedic knowledge from the point of that the Vedic knowledge itself is special and good just because it's Vedic. No, it's special and good because it is the reflection of the original Vedic. Right? The actual Vedic is what goes on in the spiritual realm. Then to give opportunity for living entities to take part in that Vedic is brought here. Does that make some sense? Vedic means it comes from Veda. So whatever is going on in the spiritual realm, those principles will come down through the Veda and then through all the expansions of the Veda, all the different branches of Shruti and Smriti like this. So then when those come through here, then the Vaishnavas see it as this is the form of culture that they use in the spiritual realm. So therefore, naturally you'd use it. You wouldn't use something else. Why would you use something else? Right? If this is what how Mother Jashoda deals, why we shouldn't deal? If this is how Radharani deals, why we shouldn't deal? If this is how the friends deal, or the, it means that's all. The kings there, they deal. The Vaishyas, they deal. You know, like Nanda Maharaj and that, they take care of cows, right? So they milk the cows, and the bulls plow the fields. So they do Krishi Gauraksha, right? They farm and they take care of cows, right? From that, they pay their taxes from that, from their dairy products and from their grains. And because they're Vaishya community, then excess, then they trade. You always hear of them going to the market with extra yogurt and other things like that. You know, so they do trade. You don't hear of banking so much. You know, like that though, there's a story in Mukta Charita that Krishna wants to borrow pearls and they don't want to give. You know, and then he grows his own, he decides to grow pearl plants. And so then, you know, he takes Mother Yashoda's pearls and grows these pearls, and they're so much more fabulous than the ordinary pearls. And then all the gopis think, hey, you know, so then they take all their pearls and plant them all. You know, and where Krishna had these fabulous creepers of pearls that gave these, you know, amazing pearls, they just grew thorn bushes. You know, the gopis. So they put all their pearls in the ground, and you know, they took all their parents' pearls and all their pearls and everything and planted them, and they only got thorn bushes. So then they were in a big problem. So they went to Krishna and they wanted to buy some of his, but they don't have money, so they want to get it on credit. And then after, you know, so then you do get that whole barter, that whole thing of banking there. So in the spiritual realm, these principles, because they're there, then there's a variety of pastimes that can take place, right? Means if one is thinking the generally the kind of from the impersonal background, one thinks that it's just sitting there and experiencing the mood, the bhav. And that's it. You're not actually doing something. You know, that's it. You know, you go out in the forest and experience it. Or something, the music, you just experience it. Or, you know, something, it's just experienced. But experienced means that the verb is not doing anything. It's just showing existence. Existence, emotions, feelings. You know, like that, qualities. But they're not doing anything. You know, it's doing nothing. You know, the book is read. So a red book exists. That's what's going on. Right? Okay. Nice. But it's, there's nothing happening. So that already is going on when Krishna is in his form of Atmarama. Before the creation, he's Atmarama. So he's already experiencing, you know, the creation and the living entities and rasa, everything within himself. Just being, but not doing. Does that make sense? So it's nice. But for someone who is actually a rasik, who is a real taster of rasa, which is Krishna, because he is rasa, right? So then he decides to expand and create activity, create interaction. Does that make some sense? So this interaction, that is what is important. So then if you want to perform transcendental pastimes unlimitedly, eternally, then there has to be some fields from which you're going to get variety. Right? So Krishna has perfectly chosen each aspect of the culture that in itself it's perfect. Right? He's picked seven notes for music. And those seven notes, you can go on writing music eternally and never exactly do the same thing twice. Because you have the notes, then he's created so many different talls, you know, the meters. So, and then within those, the notes will form together particular patterns that express a particular emotion, or a particular season, or a particular time, you know, which all are connected. They're still all emotions. A particular time creates an emotion, a season creates emotion. So therefore, it's all still rasa. But he's done that with seven notes. Right? So like that, everything he's chosen then is perfect. The laws, they just deal with a few things, really. You know, they deal with four varnas and four ashrams. Right? And then what's outside of that. And then within that, then you have, basically, depending on how you put it together, Manu here deals with 10. Then Narad Muni deals with 30. Basic qualities that are there. You know, your respect, your humility, sense control, knowledge. These, how you say, charity. All these different kinds of things. Kindness, you know, because charity is only kindness. So all these basic qualities, and that creates a culture of interaction. Then within that, then you have your music, then you have your dance, then you have your cooking, then you have your dressing. You know, it's just like you have a flat piece of cloth, and you put some colors on it, some few designs, some borders. But, you know, you never see one woman in the same sari as another. Right? And there's millions of women. So the same flat piece of cloth, they've created unlimited designs. You know, you see rugs, it's different. You see woodwork, it's always different. There's always something different about it. Your architecture, every building is something different. There may be a genre of buildings, but it's different still. It's not exactly the same. Unless, of course, you go to San Francisco. But other than that, then they're different. You know? Does that make some sense? There's something about it. They just adjust. So this way then Krishna is created a complete, you know, society, a complete situation in which rasa can be tasted. And not only that, then within those rasa, all that complete is there, then he's put emphasis on the different moods. So in Vrindavan it's on spontaneity. You know, Vaikuntha, then it's on rules and regulations. And Dwarka, it's considered, it's the origin of Vaikuntha, but it has that, still that kind of, some elements of spontaneity there. All the five rasas are manifest, while in Vaikuntha, basically only servitorship is there. Conjugal is there, Lakshmi is there, but nothing's going on there. He's just with his consort, just like all the residents of Vaikuntha are with their wives. But the whole mood is master and servant. You know, you go to ayogya, and then it's that of maryada, of, you know, the proper, you know, noble, virtuous, everything done perfectly according to the rules and all that, and nothing outside of that. Because in Dwarka, Krishna many times bends the rules. You know, he kills Karna when he's unarmed. You know, he kills Drona when he's in meditation. You know, he does, so many times he does many things, because, you know, it's another topic, you know, because you can discuss and show how they actually deserve that. But the point is that Krishna will take pleasure in creating these kind of things where things don't go right. You know, like that. And from that, but, you know, he establishes the ultimate, you know, rightness, you know, that transcendental love. So then there's a difference between the two, though they're both Kshatriya moods. You know, Vaikuntha is also a Kshatriya mood. But in Vrindavan, then it's Vaishya mood.
What about
Mathura? Mathura is in between. It's kind of like it's... It also is a mood, but it's, there's a little bit more intimacy there. But it's kind of seems to be very kind of mystical, because there is where the original expansions of Balaram, of Mahanarayan, that's where they sit. So Mahasankarshan, Mahanarayan sits there. So that's why you see the pictures of Krishna and Balaram in Dwarka, and they're walking through the street with four arms. But they look just like they did in Vrindavan, but they have four arms. So there's a slight difference. So you have all the five rasas there. You know? And he's not married to all those girls and all that, but at the same time it's not, it's just, it seems to be just a matter of tasting. No, that's why then you hear Vrindavani of Dwarka. And Mathura is something that's kind of like a, it's something in between. So, because it's too close to Vrindavan, but it doesn't have, as you know, its existence seems to be, you know, it's a little, it's kind of mystical aspect. You know, it's just, it's not dealt with so much. You know, the pastimes are there, you know what goes on there. Those things are there. But the prominent realm then is Dwarka. That's where Vaikuntha really starts. Because Mathura, it's hard to actually say it's Vaikuntha, because there's still a spontaneous mood there. But the spontaneous mood isn't as noble as Dwarka. Like, that spontaneity is there, but it doesn't have the same purity that Dwarka has. But Vrindavan has even more pure. Like that. So, you know, therefore it's a little bit in between. But Mahanarayan is there, then from there they expand into Krishna and Balaram and Dwarka. And then from there, then they expand into Vaikuntha or into Garbhodakshaya Dakshaya Vishnu and then Garbhodakshaya, like this. So you get two lines. That's why you see, you have Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, and then you have Advaita. Because from Nityananda, then you'll get Mahanarayan, you'll get Krishna, Balaram and Dwarka, and then you'll get Narayan and Vaikuntha. Right? Because he's God. But when you go down to Karanadaksha Vishnu, then it's, he is the controller, enjoyer. I mean, he's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. You know what I'm saying? Vaikuntha, there's only maintenance. So two things get added, creation and destruction. Therefore, then you have Advaitacharya, because it's a slightly different mood. Right? Then you have Garadhar Pandit, who is Radharani, is the internal potency. Right? Then the internal potency expands the jivas, and then you have Srivas Thakur. So there's Panchatattva, the whole creation, in its, you know, summary form, is there. It's complete. You know, with Krishna, you get Braj. With Nityananda, then from there that connection all the way out through Vaikuntha, and then from him then expands into Advaitacharya, the material world. Then the internal potency expands into the jivas, like that, and material energy. Yes.
The jivas, are they expanded from Shakti type or Vishnu
type? Shakti.
They expanded.
Yeah, it means we're energy. We're Shakti. We're not. Means everybody comes from Krishna. But the point is the energetic has energy. So we're one of his energies. But we're not a direct expansion, we're an expansion of the expansion. We're a portion of the internal potency. So we expand from the samvit potency. So that's why samvit means is that's your knowledge and activities. That's why then it's recommended if the jiva wants to purify himself, then he has to perform activities with knowledge. Then he becomes purified of the material, because here he thinks it's ignorance. You're performing activities in ignorance. So you want to reverse that, perform activities in knowledge. So that's the reason. Then it all works. So then the whole point we were trying to make is that one is, therefore, the Vaishnavas take serious interest in the Vedic culture only because it then gives a broad range for engaging activities in Krishna service. See, if one has very minimal interest in the material world, one uses very minimal of the Vedic culture to deal with. Right? Because you only deal with how much you need to of the reflection. Right? You have all the rasas reflected here. You have the emotional need to deal with all the rasas. Then there are the Vedic culture, how to deal with that. Does that make sense? So that's there. But if you have no need to deal with all the rasas in your own personal life, then you don't have to, you only have to deal with how much you have to deal with. So only that much of the culture you'll use. But as a preacher, because you're dealing with people who need to deal with a broader range, therefore you know it and you know how to preach it and how to encourage them and get them to function within that, within those spheres. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, one can know the whole culture by knowing the spiritual culture. By knowing here, you can't know there, but by knowing there, you can understand what's here. Because it's just a reflection of there. You can get an inkling of what's there, you know, the forms of it, but the moods of it and all that, then one has to be very careful to not throw into it that they're mundane. Does that make any sense? Like that. So that brings it, then the Dharma Shastra then becomes a very important aspect, because it is basically the form in which the transcendental culture functions. Right? But in Vrindavan, it's not the rules that are important, it's the rasa that's important. So sometimes you'll see that what goes on may or may not go nicely always according to the rules here. Because the purpose is that affection. Right?
But the rules still exist.
The rules still exist. Means they're following. It's not that they're rules. It means it's like this. It would be like this. You have... take an example. Shakespeare. He writes plays. And then from the way he likes plays, because they're so popular that you can't criticize him, he basically uses English in the way he wants. No one else uses English the way he uses it. I've heard that he's added himself 400 words to the English vocabulary that he just created, because he didn't have words. He wasn't that educated of a person. But he had great inspiration, so he wrote these, and because, you know, there isn't that, how do you say, there wasn't that fixed of a form of so many things. You know, especially in England, it had much more broad range of language than you would find, let's say, in America or like that. So then he would use it. So then after that, then you write down what he's done, and then you call it Shakespearean. Right? Or Bach writes music, and then you put it together and say, that's Baroque. You know, or a time in, there was there when all the arts and everything like that, and then afterwards you go back and call it Renaissance. You know what I'm saying? So after an inspired person does something, then it becomes codified into rules how to do what they do, and then that's taught to the future generations. You know, you have a great artist, great musician, great anything. Then what they did was not according to as such rules were written, because no one did, but they understood principles. Right? And they always function perfectly on principles, otherwise how'd they get a good result? But they could see those principles applied in ways other people couldn't. So then they apply it, and then people study those details, and hopefully they try to get to principles if they even know that that's how it works. But generally they tend to just stick to the details and then figure that they're doing what that artist is doing. But that artist is doing something else. They're dealing with the principles. Therefore it becomes, you know, that inspired. So there is what the residents of Vrindavan do, the principle of love and of pure unalloyed love that's not mixed in any way, they are the acharyas of. And so what they do becomes codified for all the other realms of existence, both spiritual and material. Does that make some sense? So therefore it works perfectly according to the rules, because they're the ones that make the rules. Because the principle of pure, unalloyed love for Krishna is the rule. And when it's in that particular mood, it manifests all those different things. So because it's geared towards Krishna, it's perfect. So Mother Jashoda's, you know, over-attachment to Krishna. I mean, and you don't hear of him going to Gurukul or anything. He just stays in the house and grows up, and it's just a complete grihastha. There's no question of brahmachari. He's not married, so he'll be called a brahmachari. Like that. You know, sometimes Krishna says, you know, yes, I'm a very good brahmachari. And all the gopis go, yeah, right. Yeah. We know you're a brahmachari. Yeah. Like this. Right? So it's not there. But because the point is their attachment and keeping them is all for his pleasure. And he is God, so he doesn't become spoiled. Krishna doesn't become a spoiled brat, because he's God. He is the enjoyer. While in the material world, that particular reflection, if the mother behaves with that attachment, spoils the child and ruins the culture. Right? It makes a materialistic culture. You understand?
But you say that Vedas, they exist. They also exist in Goloka Vrindavan, like they quote from the Vedas. Yes. So they are, in a sense, far beyond the teaching from the Vedas in regard to love of God.
Yeah, but at the same time is, you have to have a medium to express that love through. Right? Just like you have a friend that you have affection for. You buy them a gift. The gift doesn't actually represent your affection. It's simply a medium through which to express it. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, if you say, you know, hey, you're a great dude, you know, that's nice. You give them something, invite them over, feed them, you know, do some activity together, it's much more appreciated. Right? That's the whole point. Vaikuntha, they just stand around all day saying, you're the greatest, you're the most wonderful, you're the... And it's nice. But in Vrindavan, then they go beyond that, because the affection's so great, it goes beyond that. So that consideration, it comes from there, but at the same time it manifests through here. Right? The Vedas manifest here, Brahma, and then the creation here. And so then the Lord and his devotees, they come down to the material world, and they perform their pastimes here. So that transcendental realm where they perform the pastimes, in other words, Gokul Vrindavan, you know, or, you know, Boma Dwarka, Boma Vrindavan, Boma Mathura, Boma Navadvip, all these different places that are here, for those who are from the spiritual realm, they don't see any difference between them. They're the same place, just one's up, one's down. Does that make some sense? They don't see any difference between them. So one's up, one's down. But the one that's down, that's where you get the sense of all these things coming in and all those different things. And then that is just tasted in the rasa, in the spiritual realm. Mm-hmm. You understand? Because here they'll follow those things. There they don't bother. There they follow them, but they're only there for rasa. They're only there to add to the rasa. Does that make some sense? Like that. So there's a slight difference in that way, but that's where one would say, where is it from? It's from there, but it's been manifest here. Because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra then goes into Kama Gayatri, that goes into Brahma Gayatri, that goes into, that contains Om. Om comes through, Om then expands into Brahma, the Brahma Gayatri, into the Purusha Shukta, into the Vedas, into the other literatures. So it's all started there. It all started with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, all the scriptures. But, you know, so the Hare Krishna Mantra includes all that already. But they already know them separated. They know how they manifest here and how we know them. But they originate there because they work on the same interaction. Okay? So the main point here is not so much to get into that aspect, but to get into the aspect of understanding that therefore the devotees follow it because this is the culture from there. So the principles of it then are the best way to make a culture that interaction works that's Krishna-centered. You know what I'm saying? So what I was saying about difference is therefore then the mother here then sends her kid away to the Gurukul. You know, there's more austerity and everything here that you may not find there. Because there's no need to. Here, austerity is performed for a higher purpose. There, they're always functioning on the highest purpose, so there's no need of austerity. Like that. Does that make sense? Their austerity is separation from Krishna when he goes from Vrindavan to the forest, or when he goes from the forest back into Vrindavan. You know? Like this. So that's their austerity, is that separation. But here, then, you know, you have to go through those different things. You give charity and then you get all these different things. There is just a way of interaction in the culture. And everything. That makes some sense? So the devotees see it from that angle. So the idea is not to perfect Vedic culture. The idea is to perfect our life in connection with Krishna. And the ideal medium to use is the Vedic culture, if we're, you know, on the conditioned platform. But if it comes down to where we can't operate in a, you know, in a nicely manifest way, an aspect of the Vedic culture, but we can't do that, but we know what actually makes a culture work, then we manifest that principle, even though the detail is not ideal. Does that make sense? You know, it's just, yeah, is that? Okay. You just like, the point is to cook with devotion. And of things to cook, then you would cook with devotion, then that means if you're really looking at, oh, what does Krishna like to eat? So Krishna likes this Indian cooking. So then if we have the facilities, we'll cook for Krishna the Indian cooking. But if we don't have the facilities, the main principle is cooking with devotion. So therefore, you take whatever you have and cook whatever you can for Krishna. Does that make some sense? So that's why if you can't, what you can't manifest, you don't worry about. But you know what is actually the principle behind it, get that done. And then when you can manifest it, you do. You know, like the devotees, when they first join, they're all just wearing karmic clothes, this and that. You know, the long hair and this and that. And then as it goes, then Prabhupada starts, as he finds facility, then he starts introducing the dhotis and the new style of haircut and, you know, all these different things. And so then it starts to manifest. But in any case, from day one, the principle of identifying yourself as servant of Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, you know, engaging yourself in Krishna's service, that is meant for Krishna's pleasure. That is from day one is manifest. Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, it's something much deeper that we're discussing here. We're not just come here to learn a few laws. It means this is one of the mediums for seeing how to serve Krishna. Oh, these moments. Oh yeah. You don't have?
I forgot.
Okay. I was wondering why it was so fat. I was thinking, wow, this is serious.
Grew overnight.
Yeah, I was thinking, wow, okay. It was a lot of pages, but does this make some sense? Because if this is caught, then how we go through this, how we emphasize things, why we emphasize or don't emphasize, makes sense. Because otherwise many devotees take these laws too seriously, and then it ends up not being progressive, because they take some principle like women are less intelligent, right? That's one of the most popular ones to take, you know, or grihastha, we're independent. Okay, you know, so then women are less intelligent, but the whole purpose of the culture is how to get out of the material world. Right? That is the real purpose. So then, to get out of the material world, then you have to be able to distinguish between what's spiritual and material. And just because you can distinguish is not enough. You have to be able to make a choice. And making a choice is not enough. You have to be able to affect that choice. So the ability to affect that choice, that's called intelligence. Does that make sense? Because in other words, to leave material consciousness, there's no nice way to do it. It's just, you just have to drop it. That's all. There's no sentiment, there's no nothing, just drop. It has no meaning, it has no importance, so it is dropped. So, because men's brains can look at something purely analytically with no sentiment at all, therefore, it is easier for them to do that. But while women, very intelligent, but they'll look at things with that tinge of emotion and attachment and relationships and all that. Therefore, even though they can see it, they've made the choice, they want to do it, but it gets held back. So that is the Vedic point in less intelligence. You know, that's the ultimate. If you're talking about dynamic women who are very intelligent, this is the point that's being made. You do have that they're very simple, right? But your common man is simple. Children are simple. So the same kind of less intelligent you'll find in a common person or an untrained person or a kid, you know, like that. You'll find it in a lot of people, you know, like that. You know, your village people will tend to be a little bit more simple than your city people. So therefore, you see, you can find that same kind of less intelligent, meaning not so clever or easily, how do you say?
Cheated.
Yeah, easily cheated and stuff like that. But women may have that, but some women don't have that. And there's a lot of men who have that. So that would be an inconsistent definition. But that's generally the definition that's taken. Less intelligent means they don't have any academic brains, they're stupid, they wouldn't know what to do, they wouldn't. No, but it also in there says they're four times as clever. So four times as clever means when you take intelligence and mix it with emotion, that application of intelligence is called cleverness. Right? But the man's intelligence, he may be clever because it's practical, gets things done and the situation, putting everything together, but he can also go beyond that. Like you see in your nuclear physicists and all these kind of weirdo headspaces, you don't find many women. Because there's no taste out there, there's no emotion out there. You know, it's just, you know, how you say, atoms and parts of atoms bumping into each other, and that's about it. You know, so there's no taste there for women. You know, if there was some romance and the neutrons bumping into the protons, then yeah, the women would get into the field. But there's not, so therefore, you know, there's nothing overly romantic about the nuclear explosion. You know, it's like that. It's like that. So, like that. Does that make some sense? So, because of that, then they dogmatically take it and then try to apply that in everything, and then it comes out to be really weird. Like that. So the point is because the ultimate point of the Vedic culture is getting out of the material world, is elevating oneself to a higher platform. And therefore the man works more on the platform of detachment, women more on attachment. Therefore, then the realm of detachment is higher than attachment, because that's what gets you out of the material world. Right? So therefore, men are considered superior here. But in the spiritual realm, you know, you take the first out of five rasas, you take the first two that dominate by women. Right? The conjugal ras, then the women dominate. The Vatsalya ras, the women dominate. You hear more of Mother Yashoda than Nanda Baba. When you get the friendship ras, then the men come in. And servants, you find both, men and women. Right? Then of Shanta, then also you have both. Cows, they're all women. Right? You know, so many of the trees and this and that. So it's just, you know, it's kind of like. So it's a different thing. But still in the culture, Nanda Baba is the king, he calls the shots, and then his mother shows us the queen. Right? Even though Radharani is the supreme most, still she is under the protection of her father or her husband or like that. So the culture is there just to create the rasa. You know? But they've already attained that perfection. So therefore it creates a social interaction and just makes it, because the woman is unsteady, the man is steady. So in other words, Shakti comes from Shaktiman. Shakti energy is always unsteady, it's flickering. But the source of it is not. So therefore the Krishna is the original, and then here in the material world, I mean, then the energy comes from him, but it's connected to him. It's dependent upon him. And it creates all kinds of nice, you know, all kinds of happenings. As long as it's connected to the source. As soon as it's disconnected, nothing happens. Right? You know, women who are connected, properly connected with men, you find them to be very wonderful and create very nice atmosphere. Women who aren't, generally don't. Right? They always have problems, so it's this, that, so many different cultures. They're just not connected. So their actual nature can't manifest. So then you have that, if you're going by tattva, right? Then you have these elements. So one has to be very careful in applying it, that therefore one doesn't see. Grihastha is independent in that he has to create and generate the economics and the social working so that all the others who are not working within it can be taken care of. But the brahmacharis, then they're not independent. Right? So they beg from the grihasthas. But the sannyasis and vanaprasthas, they're also independent. But they are also begging from the grihasthas because they don't make any endeavor for economic development. So the grihasthas, because they need it for the house, and they do that, and because that's what they're doing, then part of that must be given to others. Right? Otherwise, then they waste. They'll become overly absorbed in economic development. So something has to be given away to others. Right? And it should be given to those who are qualified. Who's qualified? Those who are endeavoring for upliftment. Like that. So therefore the sannyasis, the vanaprasthas, brahmins, brahmacharis, like that, it's given to those who are progressive. It's not given to other grihasthas who are, you know, just doing the regular economics. Right? Because they're independent, they don't accept charity. Right? They give charity, they don't accept charity. But those who are engaged in occupations that they don't have time for economics, you know, you're brahmacharis, your brahmins, your vanaprasthas, your sannyasis, they don't have time for economics. Therefore, then, the grihastha support them. That's why they're independent. Independence doesn't mean that they make it up as they go. You know, it's not Calvin Ball or something. You know, they actually have to follow the rules. But they're independent in that they, you know, they make, someone's not telling them to follow it. They have their own commitment to follow it because they're trained. They're mature. So therefore, they follow it because they know the purpose of it and the importance of it, so therefore they follow it. Does this make some sense? Yeah. Okay, so the primary is connected, what everything is, the blueprint. Now the secondary, then we see is that then is what Brahma is doing. So then we see is that the Lord became half male and female and produced Virag. Then know me, whom Virag himself produced, to be the creator of this world. So he comes from Virag. Then performing austerities are called into existence 10 great sages. That was his sons, right? They're all coming from his mind. They can, you know, manifest in different parts of his body and that, but they're manifesting from his subtle body, like that. And then by austerity, they then created the other manus, the gods, the great sages, the yakshas, rakshasas, paisachas, gandharvas, apsaras, asuras, nagas, and the manes, lightning, thunderbolts, clouds, rainbows, meteors, comets, heavenly lights, kinnars, monkeys, fishes, birds, cattle, deer, men, and carnivorous beasts, worms, beetles, moth, lice, flies, bugs, insects, and all immovable things. Thus was the creation produced, each being by the result of its own actions. Right? So then, he, from his mind, after doing austerity, produced them. They, by their austerity, then produced everything else that was here. And everybody gets these, means by the results of its own action. Means what they produced were actual living entities in these bodies, so that the living entity was in that particular body was because of its previous action. So that's what it means by the results of its own actions. Right. It's already been created. This is the categories it'll fall into. So those souls that had the karma to become those 8,400,000, then that was there. That's when they got to become embodied and then again start up their cycle of birth and death, like that. But this is all based on austerity. So then we see from here, right there, is that we see that austerity, knowledge and austerity become most essential. Without knowledge, it doesn't happen. Like Brahma in the beginning didn't know what was going on. He had this sense to create, but he didn't know who he was, where he was, anything. So by doing austerity, he knew. And by his austerity, then he created. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Okay. Then we see is okay, now everything's been created. Now he gets down to the details of how they're created. So then we see that they come from womb, egg, hot moisture, and from slips and shoots. Like that. So cattle, deer, carnivores and with two rows of teeth, rakshasas, paisachas, and men. They come from the womb. Birds, snakes, crocodiles, fish, tortoises, and similar terrestrials and aquatics, they are come from eggs. Stinging and biting insects, lice, flies, bugs, and all such others, then they come from hot moisture. Then annual plants bearing flowers and fruits, perishing after their fruit ripens, those bearing fruit without flowers are vanaspatis, those bearing with both, vriksha. These plants possess internal consciousness and experience pain and pleasure. Right. So they all come from seeds and slips and shoots. Right? It means, in other words, all the plant kingdom. So then Brahma, then from Brahma down to the last of them, they're all subject to birth and death. So that's the point of that, is that everybody's been created, but birth and death is inevitable for everybody. It's not going to be some other method. Right? Okay, now we've created everything, then you have to know is that this is always going on. Right? You start with the creation, because then you know it's there, but then he now describes the dissolution and recreation. Because technically, this Visarga means recreation, because it's been recreated from before. It's just not new. This creation of Brahma is just a recreation of the previous. Right? But you can't describe the previous until you've described the present. You know what I'm saying? So here's the thing, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Until you describe the chicken, you can't understand the egg. Like that. But the chicken came from the egg. Right? But the egg came from the chicken. So the point is the Prajapatis, they created chickens. Right? There was no egg. So this solves the problem. The chickens were first. Right? It means first was the Prajapati. From the Prajapatis, one of their wives gave birth to chickens. Right? Then those chickens then laid eggs and produced more chickens. So in the beginning there was a chicken.
That's good. Now I can say that.
Yeah.
Then they asked that.
Yeah. Okay, now, after creation, the Lord repeatedly destroyed and recreated the universe. When he awakens, the world stirs. When he slumbers, the universe sleeps. So in other words, it happens with his will. He's awake, he's active, everything's active. He's not active, nothing's active. You can't be active without the Lord. There's no question of he's inactive and everybody else can go on. No, no one is separate, independent of him. When he's active, everything's active. He's not active, nothing's active. So dissolution. When he sleeps, the corporal beings desist from action, their minds inert. Then sweetly and contently, sweetly and contently slumbering, everything becomes absorbed in him. So he is just peacefully sleeping, and, you know, no problem. Everything just gets, you know, absorbed in him. So that he's not attached. Because the point is the souls are eternal. His external energy is eternal. He's eternal. All their relationships are eternal. So the temporary manifestation is not what you're attached to. It's just coming and going. You know, because in rasa, what's important is what remains. It's just like the mother cooks a very nice preparation for the family. Now, does everybody sit around and not eat that preparation because they're so attached to it and they wouldn't want it? No, they eat the preparation. So the steadiness is the interaction between the living entities. Right? So here's the living entity, the supreme living entity. So that the material world is created and destroyed has no meaning to him. It may mean something to us. Right? We may become, you know, attached or bent out of shape, you know, if things are destroyed. But Krishna's not, because it's his material energy. The main thing is it's the relationship with living entities that's important for him. Right? That's what's important. So if that is understood, then you can see why he's detached. He has no problems. Does that make some sense? Yeah.
He's still going on relationships in the spiritual realm.
Yeah, but that's there. But besides that, just the ones here, is that now they're residing within him, or they manifest outside. When they manifest outside, then they get all busy and they get attached to everything that they're dealing with, but he doesn't. So therefore, he can sleep contently, and you know, all the universes just fold up into him. There's no problem for him. Because the rasa between him and the living entities continues. You know, it's like he's either in them as Paramatma, or they're in him when he's asleep. So they're always together. But does that make some sense? So for him, he's not attached. The living entity is, because he falsely identifies with the material energy, so he thinks when it all gets destroyed that it's a loss. But the Lord, no. Recreation. Then the soul enters into vegetable or animal seed, assuming a new body. Thus, he, by awaking and slumbering, revives and destroys the creation. Right? So we see from before is that all those have been manifest in living entities, and how they're born is manifest, and then it means when he breathes in, then they become destroyed, and when he breathes out, then they become manifest, and when he breathes out again, then, like as previously described, then they get put into these different species. Okay. Then Lord Vishnu is the origin of the sacred law. After the Lord taught these institutes to me, this is Brahma speaking, I taught them to the other sages. Bhrigu will now recite to you these institutes, having learned them from me. So now he's saying, all this there, you understand where everything's come from. Right? Then, now, we're going to... Now, explain the law. Because now we know the connection. They're coming from the Lord and how the Lord creates everything, and we understand how life works. You know? So then Bhrigu takes up the recitation. Being thus addressed, Bhrigu spoke to the sages, listen. So first he describes the manus, because the laws are going to come to humankind, mankind, through the manus. So therefore they become important. That's why manus are important. Six other high-minded, very powerful manus are... Svardhokisha, Atami, Tamasa, or Vaivata, Chakshusha, and the son of Vaivasvat. These manus, headed by Swayambhuva, produced and protected the creation. Because Swayambhuva is one of the 10 sons. Right? So Brahma's already said, my 10 sons. And from them it has come everything else. So now Bhrigu is starting to say, now Manus are there, so he says there's six others. So that means other than Swayambhuva, because Swayambhuva is there in the assembly. Right? Because this is happening, this discussion is happening on Brahma Loka. Like that. Then he describes time. Because if you're going to establish something, it has to be, activity is time. Right? And for an activity, you must know the proper time for it. Every activity has its time. So time, therefore, is a very important thing. Right? Because if you want to do something right, you have to do it at the right time. And the activity itself means time. So before you can do anything, time must be understood. Right? So then time, you have earthly time, then the day and night are the mains, which means one full day means day and night is a lunar month. Right? Means when the moon is going towards the dark moon, then that's their day, and when it goes towards the full moon, it's their night. Right? Then day and night are the gods, then the 6 months where the sun travels to the south, that's the night, and the 6 months that it travels towards the north, that's the day. So for them, 1 year, human year, is a day for them. And for the mains, then the one human lunar month is a day for them. Mm-hmm. Mains. No, mains means forefathers. Those who stay on Pitri Loka. You know, with the Yamaraj and all, the forefathers. They're always having to do Shraddha rites and all that. That's for the forefathers, that's the mains. So they're always referred here in Mana to mains. That's the, I think, the old technical word. Generally Prabhupada uses more forefathers. But in those days it would be used more as mains. Yeah. It goes back. I don't know. I mean, this is 1830s, we're taking from 1830s. This translation is 1830s. Okay. So then you have the four yugas, and then four of those yugas together make a Mahayuga, and so that's an age of the gods. Right? Then a day and night of Brahma. Then that means it's when there's 1,000 of those cycles of those Mahayugas is his day, and 1,000, the equal amount of time is his night. Like that. So only those knowing the day and night of Brahma are acquainted with time. So when you know from the smallest up to Brahma, then you know time. Because then the earthly time then is divided into 24-minute muhurtas. And so you'll get 30 of them in 12 hours, so there's 60 of them in a day. And then a muhurta is then broken down, down to, breakdown of a second. Like that. There's different ones. Some of them start from, Bhagavatam starts from the one ray of sunlight crossing over an atom. So that's one place to start from. And then you take, three of those is this, and, five of those is that. And you keep going up until you start to get something that makes some sense to us. Another one is taking a very sharp, I'm not sure, I think it's made out of gold, so as thin as you can make gold into a needle. And you take a particular leaf, like a peepal or some kind of banyan leaf, I think it is, floated on water. And then you take that needle and with force stick it through that leaf. The time it takes to go through that leaf, in other words, that sound that you'll get, that is then you start calculating from that. And then so many of those will build up until you get it. Another one is blinking of an eye. So Manu uses the blinking of an eye. It's called a nimisha. So there's so many nimisha, so many like this, and it builds up until you get up to the 24, the muhurta, and then so many muhurtas, and then you get then you get a day, and then two day and night, and then you get the months, and you get the years, and like that. So that's how it works.
Is it true that the human life span is measured in number of breaths?
Yeah. That's from the Yoga Shastra. Yoga Shastra will look at it that way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's there, yeah. That's why you don't want to waste your time doing activities you don't need to, running around the block. Yeah, if you have to, then you do it. But if you don't have to, why waste your time?
Not Brahma Kesari, the equal days in mass. So does it mean that for human beings also the same measurement for that, that day and night?
Basically, you see, is equinox means the day and night are equal. And then as it moves, sun moves more towards the north, you know, then the day is longer, night is shorter. When it moves towards the south, then the night becomes longer and the day is shorter. You know. So these are all the average, you know, things that are going on. So because this movement of the sun happens just in the day of the demigods, so therefore for them, their days are always the same. They don't have this longer and shorter. Only we'll get that because the sun is moving and it moves farther up and farther down. So therefore then we'll experience that, but the demigods won't. You know? So that's as it's going up, that's their day, and as it's going down, it's their night. Like that. So they don't get that fluctuation. For them their days are always the same length. The day and night's the same. But it's natural. Once the sun goes down, then there's a little bit of time after that that is your, you know, evening life, and then you take rest, and then you get up in the Brahma Muhurta. So that means like it means then the demigods get up. So it's like Kartik is the end of Kartik. That's when Vishnu wakes up. He sleeps during 4 months. So 6 months of four of them he's asleep. Right? So that means 2 months he's up. That means before the sunrise. So like that.
Approximately how many years have the Brahma lived?
The demigods live 100 of their years.
So what's the difference? I mean,
that's the point. That is intelligent. That's what the Upanishads are trying to point out. Is that we look at it, wow, you know, the Indra lives for, you know, 72 Mahayugas or 71 Mahayugas. So you think, wow, that's a long time. But to him it's just 100 years. That's the point. Is the experience is the same. So there is no use. So someone who studies the Upanishads, or studies Vedanta, this is their point. Therefore, they don't engage in karmakanda. They follow the Vedic culture, but not for the purpose of elevating themselves to the heavenly planets. Yeah, but at the same time, is the experience for you will still feel like 100. That's the point. Whatever your lifetime is, it will feel to you as 100. That's the point. It's just like the bug lives 2 weeks, you know, the ant lives 2 weeks. But their 2 weeks feels to them like 100 years. Or like a dog, they live 10 years, 12 years. So one of their years is like 10 for us. You know, you see them. You know, it's like the first year they're there, they're just like punk kids. The second year, then they're like punk teenagers, and then after that they become, you know, serious adult dogs, you know. And then, you know, last year, then they're kind of like not in good shape, and then they disappear. But you see, is in 1 year they age 10.
They multiply the dogs age by 7 to cow humans age.
Yeah, that's if you're taking. It depends on your what dog you're taking. But they say like 12 years. Or some of them more, but it's basically
Indian dogs age.
Yeah, here's maybe a, you know, 5 to 6 year cycle. Vrindavan is 3 years. They generally only last 3 years there. Here you get a few more years out of it. You know, so that's the principle. Is that it feels the same. That's the fun. So someone who understands that makes no endeavor to perform auspicious activities to go to the heavenly planets. He'll perform auspicious activities to get out of here. But if we understand going to the Brahman, you're working on the same principle. You know, you say you'll be there unlimited time. But unlimited time we know only happens in the spiritual world. So therefore, even though in the Brahman it's not judged by time, but the principle is that statement is being made compared to here. Because it's just like this. You're in a situation that's really difficult, emotionally very difficult, or physically, or whatever, you name the worst scenarios. You get out of it into a situation that has no tinge of that problems there and no fear of those bothering you. Then you'll feel so relieved. Right? How long can you be in that relieved condition before you want to do something? Right? So, minutes, hours. Right? Then you gotta get back to, okay, now everything's fine. Nothing more wrong will go wrong. So now, what are we gonna do? And then in the Brahman there's nothing to do, it's only sat. So that means then they'll have to come back and take birth in the material world to continue activities.
Does this happen by their own will, or happens automatically?
It's just automatic, because means the point is your conscious, where your consciousness is, that's where you reside. And as soon as the consciousness thinks of the material world, then they're back in the material world. So in the Brahman, I'm aham brahmasmi. But the point is when you're in the Brahman, you're working on eternal time. So you're only going to be there a short time, some minutes, some hours, on that time. And then you're back here.
So the highest credit that keeps you there also,
some do, you know, because you basically burnt those all up. There'll be some pious credit, you know. It'll be jnana sukriti. But it will put you into that state, but as soon as you become adjusted with that state, because now your consciousness is on the eternal platform, so therefore eternity goes by pretty fast, you know, because you're not actually situated and then you got to do something. So it's not long before the pain or the trauma of the material world you forget, you know. It's like it's over, okay, now okay, and this is great, hey. You know, and then after a while, you know, this is great, but it would be really nice to have do something. And then they're back in the material world.
Yeah, the mind is doing it.
Yeah.
The mind is broken.
Yeah,
there's
the bad. Yeah. Because they're still living entities. So they're still sentient, they're still conscious. So the spiritual mind becomes covered by the material, so they still have a mind. So they may not have a material mind, but the only thing that's there that they can remember is the material world. They don't know the spiritual world. So they come back. So that's the principle. So even there, it still doesn't have any real meaning. Therefore, the devotees understand that the only real, you know, shelter, the ultimate pure, you know, how you say, correction of the living entity is to go to the spiritual realm and reside as an associate of the Lord on one of the transcendental planets. Like that's the actual rectification of the soul. Yeah. So therefore, they only endeavor for that.
Especially if this is a very auspicious time to go to the heavenly planets to come back there.
Yeah, that could be a little less suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 10,000 golden age. And, you know, generally the shortest stint on these places is 10,000 years. You know, if you go to the moon, go to Pitri Loka, it's generally like that, 10,000 years. So by the time you get back, then the party's over. If you go to another one, you stay a little longer, then I'm not sure if you want to join that party, you know. Because it's got another 432,000 years. You know? Well, minus, not 422,000 years. You know, left of complete madmen. You know, so you don't want to be part of that party. So yeah, definitely that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Same time, according to your desires, will be taken to wherever in the creation you need to go to fulfill those needs. Okay. That's why it says Brahmanda Brahmite Kuna Bhagyanji. It means they can be moved from universe to universe if need be. If the situation is not here for you, they may move you to another universe because there you have, you know, that just perfect, you know, spot behind the right rock, you know, just in the right, you know, arid condition, in the right amount of shade, you know, just where, you know, the right amount of goats are going to step on your head, you know. You know, if not, you know, chew off your head every time they walk by, right? You know, it's been perfectly exactly that spot that you get that much water and that much nutrients and that much harassment. You know, it's not by chance. Each blade of grass has been worked out exactly their placement, you know. So that's how exact the management is.
Prabhupada was describing some kind of progression of Krishna's pastimes, starting from Vrindavan to finally to Varaka, and she presents Vaikuntha. So how would you understand this? It means that Vrindavan is the topmost field of manifestation of Krishna's rasa. So and from Vrindavan he goes abodes which considered to be lower. Mm. So, according to rasa term, how we can understand this?
Because he is rasa. That's all part of the ocean of rasa. I'm saying the most wonderful, you know, form of that rasa is then in Vaj. You know, the most, the intensity and the depth of the exchange is at its greatest. So that makes it special. But for there to be the greatest, then you have, it means, you know, to have the most perfect, you have to have more perfect and perfect. You have to have something to compare it to. You say, this is the better than that, then you have to have a standard by which to do. So that means something is superior, something is less. But in the spiritual world, everything's perfect, so it's all just different manifestations of perfect. But Vrindavan is most perfect, is the, you know, perfect, more perfect, most perfect. It's the most perfect. Vaikuntha is perfect, but Vrindavan is most perfect. So that's the thing. It is perfection, but even within perfection, then there is variety.
He thinks about Krishna has a degeneration in his resume. Because he had a very good beginning, and of course his life lower and lower.
No, but that's just because he's in the material world, so you have to establish an atmosphere that's favorable for the devotees to be able to perform their services.
Krishna is in each of these situations. Eternally, he's eternally in Vrindavan, eternally in Gaurav.
But there's still, just to show the expansion is there. It means that time out, that means that the relationship is shown, but you're dealing with, you know, eternal principles. That all these elements are there, all these rasas are there. They've always eternally been there. But then at some point Krishna manifests them. Just like all the Vaikuntha planets are there, but at the same time as they're always expanding and more Vaikuntha planets are manifesting. Right? The jivas have always been there, but Krishna is always manifesting them. So that means the spiritual realm and the material realm are always growing. Because Krishna is just manifesting it, expanding it. But at the same time, is what he's expanding always existed. Like that. So that's where it goes a little bit beyond our, you know, how you say, cranial capacity, you know. Because we're dealing in time and space, and this doesn't fit in time and space.
Soon the needle ends somewhere or somewhere else it starts again.
Yeah, that aspect is there. But what I was saying is this idea is that the spiritual, what's eternal, can be expanding. Because if it's eternal, it means it's always there. So how does it expand? That means it manifests. That means it seemingly there's a beginning. But it's not a beginning, it's just when it manifests. Because the beginning, there is no beginning. Because Krishna means everything is already present within him. It's just a matter of when he wants to manifest it. So you can see it. It's always there with him. That's what I'm saying. This is the limit of our intellectual ability. We know that that's the way it is. We know that's what's there. But that's all the farther we can understand it, because that's it. You know? Because our brain works by time and space, and this is beyond time and space. So you can't do it. You know, it's like trying to tell what it smells like. You know, the quality of perfume by using a thermometer. You can't. The thermometer doesn't have any capacity to check fragrance. So a brain that functions on time and space doesn't have the capacity to check something eternal and unlimited.
And the same thing, a conviction I have within this Swarup, that it's always said, now because of Chaitanya of the ends, we have the possibility to go into such and such place in the spiritual world now. That's what's about if the Swarup is that I'm a resident of Vaikuntha.
If you want, you go there. You
no, I mean, the eternal position is Vaikuntha citizen.
Yes, so then one will go there.
How can I go into the Chaitanya Lila?
Means you don't have to. Point is that once in the day of Brahma, this opportunity is open.
What means opportunity when you have eternal Swarup and Vaikuntha?
Because you'll come in contact with the movement that takes you to Vaikuntha.
So you change your eternal position in the spiritual world?
No, mm-hmm. It just means you, where you're supposed to go, that's where you're directed.
Because you're in this Sampradaya, that means... That
generally means is there, or it's a combination. At least it means Chaitanya Lila and Vaikuntha. You know, so that opportunity to appreciate the two fields that's there, so to be able to see what is going on in Vrindavan and appreciate that. Like Narad Muni, he is a resident Vaikuntha, but he is able to go and take advantage of the Vrindavan, the knowledge and understanding and tasting of that Vrindavan pastimes. You know, so he is a special. He is in Chaitanya Lila and he's in Vaikuntha. Murari Gupta, you know, Ramachandra's Lila and Chaitanya Lila. But if it's just, you know, only Vaikuntha, then there's other lines. Even at present day, the Madhvas and the Shris are there for those who, their connection is to Vaikuntha.
Narada Muni by choice. He's Vaikuntha. He knows everything and he experiences, but I think there's some story where he says, I had enough of this, I'm going back to my class.
Yeah, because the spontaneity and this and that may get just too much, because he likes it manifest according to, you know, the form of rules. So then for him that's his taste. You know, it's just like you may have your special thing that you like to eat, but any connoisseur will appreciate anything cooked properly from any cuisine like that. But he still has his own preference of his preferred meal. It means what he eats every day, that's his preferred meal. But he doesn't mind as an alternative or for a snack or now and again eating any cuisine if it's properly cooked. So being a rasik, he can appreciate any rasa of any realm. But at the same time as he has his natural preference. Yeah.
That's the very fact that I'm sitting now here, and not somewhere in South India, in the Sri Sampradaya, is that my Swarup is in the Chaitanya Lila.
Yeah. And then whether it connects into Vrindavan, Dwarka, or Mathura, or where else.
Yeah, because I was a little nervous, you know, you hear all this, that we get these teachings, and I don't think anyone of us wants to go to Vaikuntha. Everyone wants to go to Chaitanya Lila.
Yeah, because that's there. But some people will hear and Vaikuntha sounds nice to them. It's just a matter of taste. One can change to a higher taste, rasa. One will never go down, but generally they don't because they're satisfied. It means technically you could, but generally you don't because you're satisfied. You know, it's just like if you're happy with the bananas, why you'll change to apples? You like bananas, so you know, others can eat apples, you don't mind. You know, you can even taste an apple or two. That's great. But, you know, when the push comes to shove, you want your bananas.
There's thousands of devotees right now in South India.
Yeah, because they're there and we go there and they're very nice devotees and everything. And they appreciate what we're doing and this and that. But at the end of the day, they just like their rituals and their ceremonies and their moods and everything like that. They're very happy with that. So that's the thing, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can span all of that. And if any realm, you can take part in his mission and get to that realm. So even if you want to go to Vaikuntha, you take part in the Sankirtan mission, you'll get there.
But as a Gaudiya Vaishnavas, devotees, generally, they want to be, you know, the special, you know, rasa to those devotees outside of our Sampradaya, different Sampradayas. No. To share with them, like Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, we have some examples of those devotees who have been converted to Gaudiya Vaishnavas from others.
But it's one or two, but we don't go out and preach to them, because what they're doing is not wrong. Point is we go, we do a program, if they like it, they come. It's not that we're trying to convert them, it's not about, that's religion. But the point is religion is what is inherently natural to them. So it's inherently natural for them to be in Vaikuntha. So there's no need for us to preach that. We can inspire them to be more fixed in the principles of bhakti. So we'll preach to them bhakti. We don't have to preach to them that you have to give up doing there and come to where we're going. No. We may use pastimes of Krishna and like that to as examples. And then somebody may, from hearing that, become attractive. But if not, you just preach to them so that they become better, you know, Vaikuntha devotees. You know, like when Prabhupada would preach to the Christian priests in the monastery, I think it was in Australia. Mm. No one. He just preached love of God. You know, this is the common principle of religion, is developing love for God. He didn't say, you know, you guys are all nonsense, or there's a higher... No, he just put it like, what is the essence? Because the essence is common. It means devotion, the essence is common. You know, but there's a difference between pure unalloyed and pure. Like that. So, but the basis of the whole thing, of the bhakti, that's common. You can talk about pure unalloyed, and they will have their forms where they will consider it's more pure or less pure. So then they may convert it into that and become inspired to take to their highest platforms of their, what their sampradaya offers. But at the same time, is if somebody becomes attracted, then the rare case, then they may. It's not a problem. We don't go to them to convert them to you. Because first of all, is you have to be situated on it. You've heard it is, but how do you? But what is your taste for it? Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Unless you have that taste for it, then how are you going to attract anyone? How are you going to inspire them? So therefore, it's the principle of emotional service is important.
What about those quite strong sayings by our priest, Acharya Prabodhananda Saraswati, who once wrote in those who don't worship Lord Chaitanya, they just get demonic impact and they go to the chaos. So what about such special mood of our Acharyas?
Means who worships Radha Krishna without Lord Chaitanya, then who are they going to get? Or how are they going to get anywhere? But the Vaikuntha Vasis, they're worshipping Vaikuntha Pati. You know? So if they're following their Acharya, there's no problem. But for those in this line who don't take Lord Chaitanya seriously, then what's the point? If they don't see that Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna, how are they actually going to be devotees of Radha and Krishna? Because in Vaikuntha, they may appreciate Radha and Krishna, but they're worshipping Radha and Krishna that expanded from Kiradaksha and Vishnu. So they're actually worshipping the Vishnu Murti. in the mood of Radha and Krishna. So that's the other 999. So once in a day of Brahma, you get Swayam Krishna, who is the source of Vishnu. So they don't know this.
Oh, so they come every time, Krishna comes every day of Brahma. And explains him, but not the original one.
No, he comes 999 times in the day of Brahma. Because every Dwapara Yuga, the avatar is black and Krishna is called Krishna. But once in the day of Brahma, he comes as Swayam.
So in other Kali Yuga, there's also a Krishna consciousness?
Every Kali Yuga, then the avatar is Chaitanya. But still, it's also an expansion of Vaikuntha. Either it's, you know, direct or Shaktivesh or like that. So the chanting the holy names is the process.
I didn't know that. I thought the other Kali Yuga was there as well.
No, there's always. The avatar in Kali Yuga is always golden colors. So it's always Chaitanya. But this is Swayam, Krishna, as Chaitanya. Not a Vaikuntha Murti as Chaitanya. You know, every Treta, you know, Ramachandra comes. Like, you know, Satya, I think it's Narayana. Like that, or it says Yajna, or something like this, you know, whatever. It's white there. So there's, oh, I think that was Hamsa. So like this, and there's, that's always going on. So they're always happening. In a day, then there's so many of the Shaktivesh, I think there's seven Shaktivesh, or seven, there's seven Aveshas that are of Shakti that are there. And I think in a day, then there's 22 avatars that come. That do all these different things. They're outside of these. So that's why it says it's unlimited. Because you have the Yuga avatar, you know, and then you have the Lila avatars, you have the Shaktivesh avatars, you know, like all these. So many things are always going on. Yeah, well, this one is only in that once in a day of Brahma when Swayam Krishna comes, then Dwapara switches, because Dwapa means two and Treta means three. So generally it goes Satya, Dwapara, Treta and Kali.
So that's
yeah, it switches, yeah. Because then right after that will come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, if he comes in the second age, and then after so many millions of years, then he comes as Chaitanya, wouldn't have the same effect. You know, the same flavor. You know, it's like he immediately comes back to taste. Like that. So, therefore, it comes not over. Does that make sense? So, it's time. You know, so time is established so that the all these things can be properly set, because then the human beings, they have to have times for performing the auspicious activities. According to the yuga, then they are going to perform the activity. You know, or if they're on the heaven, if they're mains, or they're demigods, or they're prajapatis, or they're Brahma, then there's different aspects of all this applies to them. Right? Like that. You know, Arjuna got himself into trouble from that. Same time he's glorified because of that. Because Arjuna was staring at Urvasi when she come out and dance. So Indra then, you know, naturally because Indra is into all these things, so then Indra then took it that he's interested in Urvasi. So then he sent, I think it was Gandharva, I think Chitrarata or Chitrasena, who he had told to teach Arjuna how to sing and dance, you know, the Gandharva, you know, skills. So then he told them to go in and tell Urvasi that Arjuna is interested. So then she decorated herself very nicely. She went to meet Arjuna, and, you know, and she introduced herself, and he was very reverential towards her, standing and keeping his head bowed. And her thing is, hey, you know, what's going on? Indra told me you're interested. He says, me interested? No, you're our, you know, great. great, 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 you know, grandmother, you know, because she, from her, she was married to Puru Ravas. Their son was Kuru. So they're the Kuru dynasty. So that means she is the mother. So he was staring at her thinking, wow, you know, I'm seeing the mother of Kuru. You know, that was what he was looking at her for. You know, he was just going, wow, this is our grandmother. You know, this is our, you know, the mother that started our whole, you know, dynasty that we have, you know, our dignity and all that. You know, and, you know, Indra's thinking, wow, he's checking out the girls, you know. But he was just thinking, wow, you know, just, you know, could you imagine that? You know, you see somebody you're from a long line, a pure line that goes back, you know, thousands of years, and then here's the one who started the line, the mother of the line. He was thinking, wow. So she was, because she was interested in him, because she noticed he was staring at her, so she also thought it was because of this. She didn't realize it was out of all reverence, you know. So she was disappointed, so she cursed him to become a eunuch. She first explained to him, you don't have to worry about this, because, you know, here in the heavenly planets, we apsaras, we don't work by those rules. We just come down, you know, we consort with these humans. We may start somewhere, but we can come down again later, and someone else in the line they consort with. So it's, these rules don't apply to us. These are human rules. But we're Gandharvas. We don't follow those rules. They're not our rules. Because those are the rules for creating pious and impious. We're already in the heavenly planets due to our pious activities, so we don't have to follow those rules. But Arjuna, you know, he wouldn't budge. No, you're our great, 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 great grandmother, you know, so it's like, you know, I can't, you know, this doesn't fly. You know, so she got very upset. And she cursed him to be a eunuch. You know, so Indra was a little bit worried in the beginning, you know, his son, a eunuch, you know, so it's not very, it's not a great credit, you know. Indra, you know, it's like, and his son's a eunuch, you know, like that. Yeah, he'd be a laughing stock. So then he asked Urvasi, she said, okay, I can't take it back, but I can take it that you'll be a eunuch for a year and you can choose that year. So then Indra was happy because he knew that whole thing with Virat would happen. So he said that he could use it at this time. And that's why he had him learn singing and dancing. Because then he could be the teacher for the for Uttara, the daughter of Viratna. You know, so then it all worked out for him. But, you know, but so there you see the difference between the rules that the demigods have to follow and the rules the humans have to follow. Because they're there just to enjoy. It's just like the man is at his home and goes to work, there's rules he has to follow. But when he's out on vacation, he doesn't have those rules. He doesn't have to be up early Monday morning and go to work. He can sleep in. You know? While the person who works at the resort, he has to be up at 8 in the morning, and, you know, so it's kind of like, so then, you know, it's a difference. It's like the demigods and the other says, you know, hey, I'm just living, I'm living off my results of my work, so I don't have to follow these things. I go to bed whenever I want. I don't have to do any work, you know, like that. Does that make some sense? How these things, how it works? Yeah. So it's not that they're irreligious, it's just a different thing, because they're just enjoying the results. Okay, so time and the qualities of the ages. So the qualities of the ages, then in the Krita is another name for Satya. Krita age, Dharma is four-footed and complete. It means all four aspects of what is it? Austerity, mercy, cleanliness, and truthfulness. All those four are complete and full. And then in the other ages, then 1 foot is cut off each time by theft, falsehood, and fraud. Like each time it's cut down. Then the life of mortals is proportioned according to the character of the age. So the more the character, then the greater the lifespan, and the less the character, the shorter the lifespan. Like that. So we can see that also happens. The better the character, the longer the life, you know, the longer future lives will be, and the worse the character, then will shorten the life, or at least the next lives will be a little shorter. You know, you act like a dog this life, the next life's a little shorter. doesn't last the same. Various duties are prescribed for the different ages. In Krita, austerity, Treta, knowledge, Dwapara, sacrifices, and Kali, liberality alone. You know, so these ones where they're talking about really severe austerities and all that, then if they could be practiced, they're practiced. If not, then you take what's less than them. But the principle is there. Austerity is there, but you take what's there. Then what is the? So then your austerity goes to knowledge. Then it goes to sacrifices. Then it goes to liberality. You know, your knowledge goes to sacrifices. And so each time it just moves down. Like you'll see in here, sometimes a vanaprastha is very, very austere. So in this age, people may or may not be able to do that. But in Dwapara, they can do that. You know, you hear about them. Kunti, before she left for the forest, after the war, she only ate once a month. She just lost all interest. So she just ate once a month. And so then when Gandhari and Dhritarashtra and Vidura went to the forest, she also went with them. She had no interest. And so they're going, she went. Like that. Then they got back the kingdom, but you know, everything's finished. So they weren't interested. Like that. And then, yeah. Okay, next then the origin of the sacred law. So then maybe we should continue that on Monday, right? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Chanita Gaura Prenama. There's no one playing the drum. You guys play drums? Anyone who plays card calls? Huh? Narutam?